Did you remember to change your clock before you went to sleep Saturday night? The annual fall back can wreak havoc for families and sleep schedules. So where did this practice come from? You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss the history of daylight saving time is Associated Press reporter Jamie Stengel. Welcome to the program, Jamie.
Hi, thank you so much.
We are so grateful you're here. First, let's just clear this up. When we fall back, like we did this past weekend, that puts us back on standard time, right? It's when we spring forward that we're on technically on daylight saving time.
Exactly.
Okay, great. I always, that confuses me every time. So I just want to make sure we hit that straight.
Me too. <laughs> So
who started this whole changing the clocks thing? It didn't originate in the United States, did it?
No, it sort of evolved, I would say, kind of over several decades and through different mechanisms, if you will. There was, in the 1890s, there was a man in New Zealand who sort of made a push for a time change. And then also in Britain in the early 1900s, there was a home builder who wanted people to enjoy the morning sunlight more. And he made a similar push, but neither of those really gained much traction. It was during World War One and World War Two when countries actually did make start a daylight saving time in order to, with the aim of saving energy. So after that, it sort of evolved in the U.S. after World War II, where some places did it, some places didn't. It would, you know, it would change from like town to town, place to place, and that offered up quite a bit of confusion. So in 1966, Congress passed a Uniform Time Act, which says a state can implement daylight saving time or not, but it needs to be the entire state doing it.
So the original idea behind this, what was it? To conserve energy? Was that the original push?
That seems to be the push during the war. I know that earlier than that, it was for the British man, William Willett, I believe is how you say his name. He seemed to just want people to enjoy more sunlight in the morning. So it kind of evolved in different ways, I think.
Well, and we, of course, in the United States think about ourselves, but how many countries still use what we call daylight saving time? Are there still a lot of different nations using this practice?
There's about 70 countries, so about 40% across the globe do use what we would call daylight saving time.
Oh, okay. So it's not just our problem for people who don't like it.
No, not at all.
How many states in the U.S. observe daylight saving time?
I believe that in the U.S. it is Arizona and Hawaii are the two states that will just stay on standard time all year long.
Okay. Wonderful. Now, you mentioned the wars. Haven't there been periods when the U.S. observed daylight saving time all year round? I think you mentioned World War II, but is that the only time? I wonder if you could talk about that and sort of how that was received by the public.
Yeah, there was a period during the 1970s, during the energy crisis, where the U.S. decided to do daylight saving time all year long. But that became pretty unpopular pretty fast, it sounds like, from the experts that I spoke with, because people just, if you do that, then you're going to be going to, in a lot of areas at least, you're going to be going to work probably in the dark, taking your kids to school in the dark. The sun might not rise in winter in some areas till around 9 if you stay on the daylight saving time.
Well, we are going to talk with a doctor after we talk to you about the argument for using standard time all year long. But there are some people who really like daylight saving time, it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like you interviewed a number of them.
Yeah, people that I spoke with, you know, I think that the main kind of drive behind that is when you think about you have these summer months with beautiful weather and you're going to get a lot more daylight in the evening when you're off work and you can do fun activities or be out and about. That I think is kind of one of the main things that people would miss would be that extra hour during those months where it's pretty and nice to be outside.
Yeah. That's true. There is that extra hour that where it is so pretty. Well, and we talked about how daylight saving time is not just in the U.S. It goes way beyond the U.S. Tell us about Thunder Bay in Canada and its history with daylight saving time. It sounds like it has kind of an interesting history.
It does. Thunder Bay is a city in Canada. In 1908, the city of Thunder Bay, which back then was two cities, Fort William and Port Arthur, changed from Central Time Zone to Eastern Time Zone for the summer and fall after one of their citizens argued that it would give them an extra hour of daylight to enjoy the outdoors. But then the next year, one of those cities stayed on Eastern Time and the other one changed back to Central Time in the fall. So that led to a bit of confusion. But today, the city of Thunder Bay is on Eastern Time, and it does observe daylight saving time. And that gives the area really, really long, pretty summer days, according to one of the tourism experts there.
Yeah, I bet if they're in the tourism business, I bet they like talking about those summer days.
Indeed. Yeah, I think that for part of that time, they don't even get a sunset till around 10. So you can be out and about doing all kinds of things till then.
Okay, well, personal question here for you, Jamie. What do you think about daylight saving time? Just not politically speaking, but as a human, is it hard for you to make the change every year, twice a year?
You know, I don't think it's usually too hard, to be honest. Most years it kind of sneaks up on me where I see a reminder or somebody mentions it to me and then I'm like, oh goodness, I got to do it. But I will say, and I'm sure this is pretty, this is a pretty popular opinion that the falling back in the fall is pretty nice to kind of gain that extra hour.
Yes, I'm with you. I like the falling back. I just wish I didn't have to spring forward to get it.
Right.
Well, I have been talking with Associated Press reporter Jamie Stengel. Thank you so much for your time today, Jamie. It's been very helpful.
Oh, thank you so much for asking me. It was lovely to speak with you.
Up next, what falling back and springing forward means for our health. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We just heard about the history of daylight saving time and what it might be like if we did away with the practice. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss the health implications is University of Cincinnati Medical Center Director of Sleep Medicine, Dr. Anne Romaker. Thanks for being here, Dr. Romaker.
It's my pleasure.
So what's happening in our bodies when we change the clocks for daylight saving time, either spring forward or fall back? Are there physical changes that we experience?
Well, there are. The current standard time was made, if you will, as a human construct to match our physical bodies and how we interact with the light-dark cycle. When we change the time, there are a number of things that then are no longer synchronous with those clocks. Every organ in the body has a clock. Every cell in the body has its own clock. They don't all work in exactly the same time frame. And so they're sort of held together like the conductor of an orchestra by the central clock in the brain. And that is basically driven by the light-dark cycle. There are some other things that contribute, but predominantly the light-dark cycle. And once it changes, the whole body has to change. And to completely change, it takes about 3 months. Now, we can change our sleep schedule, usually when we're younger, about an hour a day. In one day, our sleep schedule can change about an hour. As we get older, it takes longer. So after 40, it takes a little bit longer. And those of us who are older than that take a couple of days. We don't just turn the clock on Saturday night and we're fine by Monday. We know that, for instance, especially in the winter, the change here in November, that in the first week after the change, there's an increased risk of heart attack, increased risk of stroke. Our bodies just don't take this as well. We're up, we're awake earlier. We are doing more things in the dark when our bodies are meant to be asleep. And so that takes more adrenaline, more stress hormones to do them. And it's just not what we were built to do.
And you mentioned heart attack and stroke. I think I've read, is there more inflammation in our bodies during these times?
Yes. When we don't get enough sleep, because we're up, our bodies are, we can't go to sleep earlier because our body's clock knows that it's, just because the clock says it's time to go to sleep, our body clock knows it's not quite time. And then when it's time to get up, it's not really ready. So we're not in sync with everything else. So the stress hormones elicit an inflammatory response. Just as you know that you're grouchy, your brain isn't working quite as well. Your body isn't either.
Yeah. I'm going to now blame all my grouchiness on my internal body clock being out of sync. I appreciate that. I've heard this described as social jet lag. Can you explain what that is?
Well, it's a really good descriptor because anybody who has traveled or flown from here to the West Coast, for instance, knows what it's like to be 3 hours out of kilter. Or vice versa, when I lived in California and I would fly back here, would know you're off. And so you want to be awake when other people are sleeping and vice versa. You want to eat when nobody else wants to eat. And yet socially, you are pressured to be engaging in activities that your body's not ready to do. When we change the clocks or change to daylight savings time, we're doing the same thing. We're telling our body to do things when we're not ready to do them. I mean, it's not ready to do them. It's even like being a shift worker. You're asking it to eat and drink and think and move at a time when it really wants to shut down. And there's a price to pay for that. There are certain genes that turn on when you're resting and genes that turn on when you're awake and alert. And when you shift everything, it's all out of kilter. And it does take 2 to 3 months to actually get everything back into sync again. And after, 6 months, we do it all over again. So we're out of kilter about half the year by changing it back and forth twice a year.
So what are there other risks associated with this social jet lag, as you've described it, other than these kind of, physical health risks you mentioned earlier?
It's really hard on students, children. There's an increased risk in car accidents. So our drivers aren't as alert and they're driving, they're sleepy while they're driving and it's dark, but it's also much riskier for the children going to school. They are more likely to be hit by cars. And secondly, they have a harder time functioning in school. Teenagers, their body clocks shift when they go through puberty to be more night owls. And so they really don't do well. It's much harder on them when they're now asked to get up and go to school even earlier. So under normal conditions, about 38% of high school students are falling asleep in their first hour of class. It gets worse after the time change. So academic performance is worse. It's even harder if these are kids who have to work after school. Or if they're taking part in extracurricular activities or sports, if they're supposed to come in early and participate in sports activities, doing heavy physical training early in the morning can have, it's harder. There's less, their physical performance is not as good. So they push harder, but their body and their brain aren't really ready to do that. So they work harder yet. So there's problems there. There's problems again in the classroom. There's behavioral problems. I mean, we're grouchy, the kids are grouchy. And then of course, if you are irritable in class, you don't get along with the kids or the teacher, you can get branded as a troublemaker. And if you start off the day that way, it kind of goes through the rest of the day. So we do our children a disservice by asking them to come to school so early, and especially having them drop back and do this in the fall.
We're talking in this recorded interview about the health implications of daylight saving time. So Dr. Rowemaker, you were just saying that, you know, because of how long it takes our bodies to adjust, we're kind of out of whack for about half the year. Some people, you know, there's always talk about getting rid of daylight saving time or getting rid of the clock changing. And some people say, hey, let's just make daylight saving time permanent. Would that be helpful or would that hurt the situation?
You know, we've tried that before. After World War II, that was tried. It was tried again in the 60s or 70s. We didn't like it. It was tried because during the oil crisis, I think that was in the 60s, but whenever it was, we tried that. We thought it was going to save energy, whatever. We tried it for about a year and a half, and we rescinded it because we as a people didn't like living that way, and it did not save any energy. By the way, people go, instead of having their lights on at night, they had their lights on earlier in the morning, so they still use just as much light, but people didn't like how they felt, and they did not like living on daylight savings time. So we have tried it. Like I said, the clock, the timing that we use was, you know, was utilized because it actually matches our activity levels and how our bodies react to the sun, our current planet, the current rotation of the planet around the sun. So
this change in the fall gets us back to standard time. And the American Academy of Sleep Medicine has been pushing for years to abolish daylight saving time, to just stick with standard time all year round. Can you talk a little bit more about, are there additional health and safety reasons behind that beyond what we've already discussed?
The other thing is that when we have daylight savings time, we get less sleep. We're already somewhat sleep deprived, but when we have light later, like in the summer, we don't get as much sleep. We stay up later, but we don't sleep in. We don't get as much sleep. So that's also a health issue. The less sleep we get, the more heart disease we get. We know that people who chronically sleep less, increases the risk of Alzheimer's later on, increases the risk of some of the cancers, it increases the risk of cardiovascular disease and hypertension. So we don't see any health benefits from that.
So what are your tips for helping people adjust to this change in the clocks, this falling back?
Going forward, it helps to have as much bright light exposure as you can first thing in the morning. So as soon as you wake up, turn on all the lights that are in your room. Or you want to get bright light for at least 30 minutes of the first hour that you're awake. And you want to do that probably for the first 2 to 3 weeks this is starting. Although many people find that they like to do this on an ongoing basis, at least until we get to the spring and the ambient light is there. We do better with light in the morning, and that helps us be ready to go to sleep 16 hours later when our melatonin peaks. So doing that helps, and making sure that we get some exercise during the day, because when it's dark in the morning, you don't feel like you're feeling kind of sluggish. You don't want to do so much. People often use some caffeine to help them get jump started. That will takes a little while to work, but some people will, you know, use that with their breakfast. Otherwise, just using the light and some activity. If you can force yourself to start moving around, a little bit of 10, 15 minutes of exercise or standing there at the kitchen table and bouncing on your feet while you're eating your breakfast to get the blood, get some activity will help get the, help get you awake. And then in the evening, after dinner, you might start decreasing the light after about 7 or 8, 7 o'clock, not having overhead lights on, just using the lamps by the side and letting yourself start to get ready to be ready to go to bed, about 16 hours after you got up this in the morning. So to set the stage for a decreased lighting, not right after supper, but, you know, shortly thereafter, not dark, just not really, really bright lights, and turning off the electronics by about 9 o'clock, and so that you're ready to sort of turn off and disengage from the world by 10 or 11.
Well, these sound like great tips. I'm gonna start trying to do this myself. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Medical Center Director of Sleep Medicine, Dr. Anne Rohmaker. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.